Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patti LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
America, we are endowed by our Creator with certain unalienable rights, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. At Grand Canyon University, we believe in equal opportunity, and the American dream starts with purpose. To serve others in ways that promote human flourishing and create a ripple effect of transformation for generations to come. Find your purpose at Grand Canyon University. Private, Christian, affordable. Visit gcu.edu.
Welcome to Stagecraft, Variety's theater podcast, bringing you backstage and behind the scenes with the stars, creators, and industry leaders keeping theater alive and bringing performance to your screens during the pandemic, on Broadway, on Netflix, and around the world. I'm your host, Gordon Cox. On this episode of Stagecraft, I'm talking to Ashley Park. She's been a Broadway favorite ever since she originated the role of Gretchen Wieners in the musical Mean Girls, and more recently, she starred in Bess Wahl's comedy Grand Horizons, which closed just a couple of weeks before the COVID-19 pandemic shut down Broadway. Because of the shutdown, we didn't get a chance to see Park play the title role in Thoroughly Modern Millie, in a City Center Encores production scheduled for May, but now postponed. This fall, however, we can catch up with her in Emily in Paris, the new Netflix series from Darren Star, the creator of Sex and the City and Younger. The show centers around a young American expat, played by Lily Collins, and the people she meets in the City of Lights, including Park's character, Mindy, living as an au pair in Paris and trying to break free from her overbearing family back home to realize her dream of becoming a singer. Which means that yes, there will be singing. Park is in the virtual studio with me to tell us about what it was like living and working abroad in the before times, how she and her collaborators hope to make Millie a show for everyone, and why she thinks Darren Star is a lot like Stephen Sondheim. Hi, Ashley. Thanks for joining me.
Hi, Gordon.
You had finished up Grand Horizons just a couple of weeks before the pandemic.
I believe we were, maybe us and Laura Linney, love her, were the last two shows to have an official closing on Broadway before everybody shut down.
And how was the experience of working on Grand Horizons? Did you enjoy it?
Oh my gosh, the best. It feels like a fever dream now, you know? also because we all got very sick during it.
Just normal sick, not COVID sick.
I don't want to start any rumors or anything like that. I've never had a flu that bad in my life, and neither did, you know, but what's crazy is actually the two people who didn't get whatever illness was going around backstage was James Cromwell and Jane Alexander. Two 80-year-olds. So they are strong as ever. But Grand Horizons was just the greatest gift. And I started with it at Williamstown last summer. And it was my first play that I've ever done, straight play. And I throughout that past year, I feel like I really came into my womanhood personally as well. So it was a really fascinating role to play. And also the last thing I played on Broadway was a high schooler,
Yeah. I was going to ask about that. If you enjoyed being in a straight play, you know, without the musical elements.
Oh, I loved it. Yeah. I loved it so much. And, you know, it's funny. I think a lot of people, when I did this play, were like, oh, do you like singing or dancing or acting better? Do you like one or the other? And I feel like for me, what I love about musicals is, you know, for me, there's no singing or dancing without the acting. It's always the storytelling first. And so I think I found, I hesitate to use the word freedom, but I found a lot of freedom in doing a straight play, and especially one that is, it was only seven people on the stage. And the most people that were in the scenes that I was in were five people, and you're with, you know, some of them, like the most magnificent actors. And I just learned so much. And, you know, to really, that play was based on the relationships and like the growth of the people in it, and not really based on any like exterior forces really. So it made me really excited to do a musical again now with like this new tool set that, you know, Bess Wahl and that Lee Silverman, like she really helped me grow. I told her one day, I was like, I feel like I owe you and like everybody in this cast, I might have said this to everybody, I was like, I feel like I owe you guys tuition for like my master's degree in acting. because I really just did learn so much while doing it, and I felt very honored to be able to be entrusted with This and Best Wolves Broadway debut too. So it was just the best. Yeah.
Yeah. And then you were all ready to do another musical. Thoroughly Modern Millie was supposed to happen in May. That, of course, you know, nothing happened in May. So, but that was the thing that all of us were, I think, really looking forward to, not only to see you in the role, but also just to see what you and your collaborators would do with this, including Lauren Yee, who was taking a look at the script. Like, what were you guys going to do with this show that has some like problematic elements in its source material that needed to be dealt with, right?
Yeah. I was actually just on the phone with Lyra DeBessonet.
Who was going to direct it?
Yeah, and it, she's going to be the new artistic director of Encores.
Right.
It was kind of her launch into it. And, you know, we hadn't talked in a few months. And first of all, thank you so much for saying that. I found it was interesting at the beginning of all this. I was very much the person who was like, oh, guys, this is very serious. We're going to postpone this, right? We're postponing this. And I feel like a lot of people are like, oh, Ashley, I'm so heartbroken for you. And what really moved me the most was how much so many people were bummed that they weren't going to be able to see it. Or, you know, so many people were excited about this production of it. Yeah. And so that's what made me sad, was not that I was not going to, you know, I have full confidence that we're going to be able to do this production in some way, because the changes that we were making were really, really, really profound, I think. And, and interesting, because, you know, we had a couple of meetings, just pre like table work and stuff, just with, me and Lauren Yee and Janine and Dick and Lear, Dick Scanlon and Janine Tesori. And also how crazy that, you know, I grew up listening to that CD, like in my car in high school. I wore it thin, I think. And I just still geek out that they are so willing to make this a show that so like everybody can do right now, you know? So anyway, so I just remember sitting at that table, and when I was talking to Lear last week, I was like, you know what, especially with all that's happened and all the different chapters of this quarantine, that was a very clear example for me way before anything came to the surface of true allyship and true, because things were being brought to my attention that I didn't even realize that I had become numbed with, or like a little complicit in, definitely just in ways that they're handling certain like sexist and racist things in the show, you know? And so I like, for example, one of the big things was one of the first things they said was, you know, this is not a colorblind Millie. And I was like, wait, what? But it is. You can't, are we looking at each other? What's up? And they're like, no, this is, we want to do, it was the first time I had thought of color conscious casting. So, you know, me, my Broadway debut was Mamma Mia, and then I did Cinderella. And, you know, so many shows when I was coming into this industry, when I graduated from college, were colorblind casting was like the big thing, you know? And I was like, oh my gosh, how amazing. We've like knocked down this like huge wall where it's like, the colorblind means there is no color, there is no race, everyone's one thing, or you're blind to it. And what they were saying is, Millie, I'm going to be a Korean American woman in the 1920s trying to move to Manhattan, and we're not going to be blind to what that experience, what, how that shapes Millie's experience, you know? And so I do believe that like we're actually going to be sharing a lot of the small things that we, but I mean, I'm such a geek when it comes to this stuff with like book work and delving into a script and a character, and, you know, why would she say this, or why would they say that? Or, you know, if she comes into this hotel and there's two other Asian people there, are they not going to be like, hey, what's up? What kind of Asian are you? You know?
Right. You mentioned that you were familiar with Thoroughly Modern Millie even before all this, and had it struck you as racist or problematic before this?
You know, I did it in high school. It was the show that I
What role did you play? Did you play Millie?
I played Millie.
Oh, wow.
And, you know, when Lear approached me about this new concept of Millie and about me playing the part, I asked her, I was like, did you know that I played this in high school? It was 3 months after I was released from the hospital after my cancer treatment. So it was kind of my...
And where was high school, for people who don't know?
Ann Arbor, Michigan. Pioneer Theater Guild was my public high school's theater program.
Yeah.
You know, I wore wigs made out of my own hair that from my cancer treatment, you know? And so in that role for me, you know, after through that experience was kind of when I was like, oh, you know, and as I reflect on it now, that was when I was like, oh, this is what I want to do. Mm-hmm. I love leaving behind the sick person that I am right now and putting on a wig and putting on some tap shoes and like being another person. And there's, you know, the reason we all love Millie so much, and when Sutton Foster played her too, there's nobody with that much gumption and that much, you know, ambition, but like heart and everything. And so I felt like it was just such a release. And I, so that was really kind of my path into recognizing that it's something that I wanted to do. Cause I didn't even know what Broadway was in high school. I really thought Broadway was like a building that like shows did stuff in. Like I had no concept of, and you know, it was just something. And I loved musical theater so much starting in middle school that I figured that it's definitely not work because it's so fun. Mm. So I had no idea, you know? So anyway, so I had familiarity with the part, and it's interesting what, you know, Dick and Janine explained, not that they are making any excuses, but they were saying, you know, when they originally wrote it, it was for a New York audience, and they made you know, Mrs. Mears is an antagonist. Like there's no redeeming quality about her. She's a bad person, and she's come to that for some reason. But, and so if she's doing yellow face, their reasoning was that that's bad. That's not good. And that's why they tried to put in two characters who were of Asian descent. One of them who ends up being a love interest at the end, you know, there's a dog again. but then when she released these rights to high schools who were doing in what state in the middle of the state, you know, then you're perpetuating something without meaning to. So that's, I mean, that was a conversation that was so, we are having already in such an in-depth and a very sensitive way. And then, you know, BLM start, you know, so I'm so grateful for those conversations and that are continuing to happen too.
Yeah. Well, we look forward to Millie when it happens.
Yeah. They definitely had a different take on what Mrs. Mears, all of that. It was going to be very different. And I think, I mean, you know, we didn't get to announce the rest of the casting. That's what also was sad for me, because I knew who the rest of the cast was going to be.
Yeah.
So it just felt like Ashley Park's Millie was canceled. I was like, no, it was all of our, you know, and I want everyone to be excited about the people they cast. But yeah.
Right. Let's talk about Emily in Paris.
Woo!
So first of all, how long were you in Paris? Where did you stay? What did you fall in love with? What was it like?
Yeah. Oh my gosh. It's so fun to be able to talk about it right now, because it was the time of my life, you know. What was interesting in talking about Grand Horizons earlier was I did Grand Horizons in Williamstown. I had no job lined up after that. I had bought a one-way ticket to meet with my friend Jonalyn, who I'm staying with in Italy. She was going there with her sister. And I was like, I'm going to pack a carry-on. I want to go to Italy. I don't have the job lined up. It's fine, because I had left Mean Girls at this point to kind of do other stuff. And so, and I knew that by that point, Williamstown, we knew that we were doing the show later that year. So I was like, great, I'll have a few months off. And then it was actually opening night of Williamstown that that Darren Star called me personally to talk about a couple of things with the character. Was it, you know? And I was like, what is this happening right now? I'm like, Gordon, I constantly, my life, you can ask everybody, I'm constantly like, am I being punked? Am I being punked? Like, even when I'm in a show, until we've done the cast recording, at any second, I'm like, I won't be surprised if you're like, you're actually being punked. You're not actually graduating right now. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, that's how I keep myself, you know, present and sane. But anyway, so during the 4 months right between Williamstown's Grand Horizons and then Broadway's Grand Horizons was my Paris time. And it worked out perfectly in that way. You know, that's what was so another fascinating thing about playing Jess in Grand Horizons and Broadway after was that I was coming back to the same character, but with a different actor playing my husband, a different actor playing my brother-in-law and my parents-in-law. And I was a different person because I had just experienced 4 months. Something I'd always wanted to do in college or, you know, ever was study abroad. And because of, being sick in high school and stuff, it just never kind of panned out in a safe way. So in Paris, I didn't realize until I went there. It was my first time ever there.
Oh, wow.
And I was like, this is my soul sister city. Yeah. I had no idea. Like everything in my life, everything about the things that I enjoyed, everything made sense. Mm-hmm. And what was interesting about the show was that I'm so excited for people to watch it because I think it's super genuine, because our joke was that Emily in Paris, it was Ashley in Paris, because everything that Emily goes through, I was experiencing in real time, kind of,
right.
Which is so fun. And, you know, another fun thing was that for me, coming from the theater world and coming from, you know, like I cherish my friends so much. And it was also the first time that I had, I'm so grateful for the way that my, jobs have lined up, but I it was my first break from really doing 8 shows a week. Yeah. And it was my first time really away from that Broadway bubble, but yeah. I was like, everybody that I know, if you've ever wanted a free Airbnb in Paris, you can come stay with me. Like, I may be filming and may not be able to hang out, but you know, and I think it was Jesse Tyler Ferguson who, at one point was like, Ashley, do you just have like a revolving door? What's happening? Cause I, you know, like fell in love with the city, I wanted everybody I love and who I know to experience it. And it kind of turned the whole Emily in Paris cast and crew into this like wonderful family that I guess is not as common in TV shows and films sometimes, just because of the way that sets work and everyone's different places. Mm-hmm. But that's all I know. Yeah. It's like we're all in a rehearsal space from 10 to 6 every day. Even if you don't have a scene with someone, you're in that same building with them 4 right. hours, 8 times a week, you know? So like,
yeah.
Anyways, Paris is the best.
I'll have more with Ashley right after the break. Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com.
And now, here's more with Ashley Park. And is the crew, were the crew international, as international as sort of the cast? Like, what was the sort of backstage team like?
So everybody was French, except for me and Lily Collins.
Excellent.
And then the writers.
Right.
We had an amazing writing team. And then the directors. And wow. Everybody else, all of the crew was French, which I loved. You know, one of my first lines in the show is, you know, French people are so mean, you know, but I was like, I feel bad because the French people were so nice to me, you know, and almost to the point where I was like, I should be better at French now. Also, because I took it for like 6 years in like middle school and high school, but I they wouldn't even let me try French because everybody was trying to speak English to me, you know, but they were just so lovely. I will say though, like our first camera test, me and Lily went, and you know, they were pointing the cameras at, we were in our first costume, they were testing lighting and stuff on us, and then they said action, and then someone was like, okay, say coupe, and I was like, coupe, as in I hadn't heard that since ballet, and it means
right. Oh yeah, right.
And I was like, oh my gosh, are you guys gonna be saying like everything in French, because I'm not gonna like stop acting, like are you guys gonna say cut and action, like I'm not gonna know. So that was like a fun little, you know, but that's what I'm saying, that's such a thing that like Emily would have experienced too,
right?
So.
You mentioned Darren Star, who is, I mean, kind of a big deal, right? Like
he's
created more than one sort of generationally important TV show. And I'd sort of forgotten this. Like, yeah, he's the Sex and the City guy, which we all sort of think of him as. But back when I was in high school, a little show called Beverly Hills 90210 was coming out, right?
Yeah.
And Melrose Place, and then younger, more recently. Like, did you know his work, and did it feel personally meaningful to you at all to be working with him on one of his projects?
Oh my gosh, of course. I mean, Sex and the City, you know, Darren really shaped how an entire generation of women, like I didn't even know like what New York City was like, or like what different kinds of relationships were like, you know, like especially like me and Lily, like our age of girls, like came up being like, oh, those are the, that's what a woman is, or like, that's what a woman goes through. Like, what is, and you know, what I love about Darren's work too, I mean, is, you know, I kind of call him, and nobody else would get this reference, but you, is like the Sondheim of TV writing. What I find so prolific about Sondheim's work, especially when it comes to women, writing for women, is the just the nuance and the complexities and the flaws he gives women in order to like be able to shape these amazing characters and have them actually find themselves or find somewhere to go, you know? And I think that Darren does that for his female characters. He doesn't write what women should be and shows them what they should be doing, but allows for these characters to find growth and like discovering the kind of woman they want to be or like what they could be. And I'm really excited for this. I mean, I think that's what was so meaningful to me too, is, you know, you know, growing up Sex and the City, I saw four white women and how they navigated a city. And that still was so impactful for me to watch how women navigate their lives. And it really was profound to me. So I am so excited and honored that an entire generation of girls may, you know, grow up and kind of find their way the same time as Mindy and Emily do. But with someone who looks like me as an example for them, you know, kind of going through the hardships and like the fun of Paris too, for them.
Yeah. Yeah. And you get to sing delightfully.
I know. Yeah. When is this coming out? Will the show already come out?
It's actually going to come out. It will have come out. So,
okay, great. Yay. Yeah. Biggest, that's like one of the top three secrets they want us to
Oh, is that you sing? Really?
Yeah.
All you know. Right. Well, they're singing. Yeah.
Yes. No, because it comes later. And you know, what was, I think that's what was so amazing too, is Darren's so great at, he is so great at making these colorful characters, but really writing for, you know, he's a master at casting, I think. Like when you see the show, every person is just perfectly cast, but it's also kind of like it's cyclical because they're also perfect because at a certain point, the writers and Darren are kind of shaping the characters after the people they cast, you know?
that was one of my questions actually was how much did you have an opportunity to, you know, give input on who Mindy is and how she sort of evolved as after you were cast?
Right. Well, I think, When I got the audition and everything, there was only the pilot was given to me. And I didn't even get the whole pilot. I think I just got my scene, you know? And what I think what it was is helpful in that part of the process is the fact that a lot of the shows that I've done on Broadway were revivals, and even Mean Girls, I kind of consider a revival because it's a beloved character and you're kind of putting your own stamp on it. So for me, I love being an actor that directors and writers would love to work with, you know, like I mean, that's part of what's so sad about right now with the quarantine. Like I love collaborating so much. So for me, whenever I come into a project with creators who are as smart and as experienced as Darren, you know, I don't question them ever and I really trust them. And so for me, like the first episode or two was really about understanding what their vision of the character would be. But in getting to know me, even our first conversation over the phone, there are certain attributes of the character and stuff that we were playing with at the very beginning that I felt strongly about either way, you know? So it was very, very collaborative. And I, the singing wise, you know, that part comes in the second half of the show.
Yeah.
And when I love, and well, I got a call from Darren after our first table read. I was on my way to the camera test, and I had one of our drivers. They're all French. Her name was Julie, and I got a call from Darren Star's cell, and I was like, "Oh my god!" You know, I'm always thinking I'm pumped. So I'm like, "Here I am in Paris. We just drove out to the Eiffel Tower. I'm going to my first camera test, and I'm fired."
Yeah.
He's going to fire me. So I literally said that to this French lady, and we weren't even like that close to it. I was like, "I'm fired." And she was like, c'est quoi? And I was like, "This is fine." And so I picked up, and you know, Darren, sweet, sweet, sweet man, was like, "Hey, Ashley, I want to ask you, you know, as we are starting to think about the, you know, other episodes, because I think they'd only really written the first block of them. He was like, would you mind if we wrote in singing for you? Because he had seen me in Mean Girls, and you know, I'm so grateful for that too, you know. And right away, I think my heart like skipped a beat, because I was like, oh my God, I would love, I love singing. I love expressing myself that way. But the one thing I did say was, I was like, if it's story driven, yes. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't want a gratuitous, oh, they let Broadway Ashley Park sing a song. Oh, they, you know, they cast her because she can sing. That character had to sing. I was like, I really, and not even story wise for the character, but if it's going to propel one of like her relationship with Emily, or really, you know, singing, I think, is the most vulnerable thing a performer can do.
Yeah.
Really, you know, it's your opening of a part of yourself that you have a different kind of control on, and it's part of your heart. You know, you sing with emotion. So I was like, you know, I think it's part of the reason I love my song What's Wrong With Me and Mean Girls. It was a musicalized part of the show where people were like, oh, we're seeing a more emotional, it's moving me in a different way than maybe the character might have without the song, you know, because it's just, it's music. So I was like, if it can do that for the character, and if it could help the story in some way, I'm all for it. Otherwise, like, I don't want to just be, you know. And you know, and I'm watching the season back, and so and especially now that I, you know, when I first saw like the episode 8 with the chandelier and stuff, because you know, how many times have I performed? I was talking to my mom about this actually. I was like, you know, I've so grateful that I've been able to perform for thousands upon thousands of live audience members, and like even like the King and I that I did at Lincoln Center.
Yeah,
you know, I wasn't in the PBS broadcast of it because I didn't do it in London. So those over maybe almost 500 shows that I did of that production, there's just no proof of it. Right. And not that you need proof. And that's the beauty of theater, is everyone's there at that moment, and that's what you're doing. But I couldn't believe, like, I'm about to get emotional right now thinking about it, but like you can tell, I think, when you see a movie or a TV show, you can tell when the people behind the camera and creating it love the person that they're kind of putting on the screen a little bit.
Yeah.
And the way that they filmed the singing stuff, and the way that they let me just be myself, and let Mindy be herself. And you get to see, I love it so much, because the whole first part of the series is her kind of being Emily's pillar of support and having everything figured out. She's a year ahead of her, you know, in terms of being in Paris, and like, she laughs off everything with humor, is comforting, calls her out, all this stuff. But it's when she starts, the singing storyline develops, that you really see where she's hurting, and like her journey that she has to do too, and Emily gets to help her with that as well. So I mean, it's the most beautiful. I'm so touched the way that they filmed it and the way that they let me do that, and I'm so glad that my like grandma gets to see it, you know, like who wouldn't be able to if it was in a theater show, you know. So
Right. Yeah. And it seems like you have a regular role throughout the show in the first season, but it feels like by the end of the second season that Mindy is going to be sort of even more of a regular presence.
I'll never forget when we got the script and we were reading that final scene or whatever, when I move in, and we were, it was actually Luca Bravo who plays Gabrielle. And he was like, I don't know what kind of mess we're going to get into all neighbors, you know, because it's also funny because you know that like Mindy is off like sleeping with people, partying up with her other Paris friends, and this is just like a percentage of her, you know. But I love that it's very synonymous to me and Lily. Like, we both had our own lives and our own friends and everything, and when we found each other, we're like, oh, you are exactly what I needed in my life and what I wanted. And like we filled a part of each other's like heart and friendship in a way that like, it's not that it was lacking ever, but we were like, oh, I know exactly, you know, where you belong in my life. And I feel like that's the same with Emily and Mindy. Like, they have their own lives, but they are so meant to be together and to be friends and sisters. But yeah, I mean, what's hilarious too, like some behind the scenes, is that like, I don't have a single scene with Samuel Arnold. And with any of the office people, I never meet them. Right. And then with Gabrielle, I have like maybe two scenes. But I like Samuel and Luca literally like stayed in my apartment with me for the last month of shooting. Like we were all so close, right. And we think it's so funny that we never had scenes together. But that's right. That's the theater world, you know?
Right. Yeah. And so what are you able to work on anything now these days? Now, as people start to think about kind of returning to work these days, you know, some movies are starting to go into production and TV and stuff. What have you been able to work on anything or will you be able to coming up?
You know, I've been kind of developing a couple series with some producer friends and also just giving myself a break. I don't think it's interesting. I was towards the beginning of quarantine. I was like, you know what? If I had done Millie at the time that I was going to be done, I would have absolutely done it and given it my all. And like the adrenaline would have gotten me through the however many weeks of encores. But
right.
I'm so excited to be able to do something with my body having been rested now. Like my muscles, I mean, I still have injuries from Mean Girls, you know?
Right, of course.
And yeah, so like I think I've just been trying to be better about, you know, doing yoga and like reading and really being mindful of like what is happening in the world, trying to get people to vote, you know, so like that's really where my focus has been. And, you know, and of course there's always people, you know, we're all trying to, you know, it goes in waves of developing and stuff. And
what are your hopes for Broadway and the theater industry specifically after all this? As you mentioned, there's so much going on right now, you know, with the presidential election and the push for racial justice and all that stuff. What do you look forward to coming back?
I mean, I don't think there's going to be a coming back in any way unless we get Biden and Kamala in office, like very seriously. But my hope is that, you know, to be very frank with you, I was feeling myself getting very, very drained from the plethora of like Zoom readings. And it sounds ungrateful because I was so grateful to be asked to do, you know, various projects. And, you know, everyone's trying to find a way to continue art at this time. Right. And I love that. And I'm so inspired by that. But I found myself becoming personally drained and losing hope because I was like, because I believe that New Yorkers and artists, and especially theater people, are the most adaptable, and they can find a way to do a huge show in a black box theater without any money. You know what I'm saying? Like we know how to get scraps and figure out a way to do it. And I was starting to get sad because I was like, oh my gosh, are we going to adapt? And then we're just going to be okay with this. We're going to be okay with doing musicals over Zoom and all of this stuff, you know? So, you know, for a couple things, you know, because I've been involved, I'm a Make-A-Wish ambassador now, and I've been involved with a couple of charities that I really care about throughout this time. But some things that I've asked for, like performances, you know, or I found myself not being hesitant or wary to do them, but like I've maybe had like two meltdowns with Lee Silverman on the phone with me being like, her being like, I'm here, I'm going to direct you. Like, I miss having a director. I don't want to set up I don't want to self-tape performances that are going to go out there on the internet. Like, for me, I love interacting with people in person, you know? And that's, even if that's not the case, like, I don't have to put myself in the position where performing would be hurtful for me, you know?
Right.
I think that, like, you know, that all of those people, the directors, the camera, like, I hope that those jobs are not kind of pushed aside. And like, I am hopeful for theater. I think that there was a lot of archaic systemic parts in every facet of the theater, especially commercial theater, because, you know, everywhere I've been actually like, you know, the family that I'm staying with, they're part of this community theater in Thousand Oaks, the Canale Players. And like, just that feeling that we all had as like kids and in community theater and paying to go to college just to like learn more about theater, like that magic. Sometimes the only place where sometimes that is lost a little bit is in the commercial theater. So, and I'm hopeful that that won't be the case. And that, but also like all of the things that, you know, there has to be changes made, especially in terms of racial inequality and all of this, 1000%. But these changes like have to be implemented like in living time and in person with the things. You know, I feel for all the, you know, a lot of theaters I think right now have hired especially women of color to be in big positions. And I'm very hopeful for all of that. But I'm also like, damn, you're gonna make these women do this when nobody wants to be in charge of trying to get a theater to stay afloat right now, and it's gonna be their job, and then it's gonna be their fault. I hope and I think it is the case that they will be supported in this. Yeah. But so I'm constantly hopeful and constantly like fired up. Yeah. And I'm very, very grateful that I'm just like, I can't believe that I get to be maybe a part of this conversation at this time. And not that I have like a say or like a, you know, or that people should listen to me, but that just in doing my work as best as I can, maybe it gives people the tools for the conversation and the actual changes that need to happen.
Yeah. Yeah. Also looking ahead, in addition to Millie, are there musical theater roles that are on your list of things to play?
Oh gosh, I'm attached to a few things, but I don't know if I should be allowed to say that right now.
All right. Well, you can say you're attached. You just might not be able to tell us what they
are.
Yeah.
Attached to a few theatrical things. I think I enjoyed the medium of doing Emily in Paris so much. Mm. Film and TV, and I loved the specificity and technicality, and there's no hiding. You have to be genuinely there in your eyes, you know, in every part of it. And I really enjoyed that, and I feel like I learned from that in doing the play. So I'm very personally interested in continuing and maybe exploring like film opportunities and that, because I only think it'll help in going back to the theater as well, in my craft there. But if there was a musical, okay, so this is my like dream musical. Want them, not that I would do a movie musical again, but if they could do Miss Congeniality the musical, and I could play Sandra Bullock's part, because that's the best, and like Taylor Swift could write the music, or like Helen Park or something like that. I would like that. That'd be fun for me.
All right. Broadway, let's make it happen.
Yeah.
Well, we look forward to seeing you in Millie and Miss Congeniality and whatever else.
As long as I can keep making, I like making people laugh.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And cry.
Well, thanks so much for talking to me, Ashley. It was great to chat with you.
Me too.
We'll talk to you soon. Thank you.
Thanks so much, Gordon.
That was Ashley Park, now starring in the new Netflix series, Emily in Paris. If you like what you're hearing on this and other episodes of Stagecraft, you can rate and review us on Apple Podcasts, and you can subscribe and find past episodes there and on all the other pod places, including Spotify and on the Broadway Podcast Network, which is a great place to find more theater for your ears. I'll be back in 2 weeks with another new episode. Thanks for listening, and see you soon.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway, and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com.
If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but not there.
No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.